A little bit about my own experience of grandparents. All my grandparents have gone to God now, but I grew up quite close to my maternal grandparents. They were probably the closest people in my life outside of my immediate family. When I was very, very young, my grandmother, who lived nearby, would frequently come and stay with me while my mum popped out to do some shopping or go to appointments or whatever she needed to do. And as I got older, I loved staying with my grandparents. And I remember them teaching me life lessons and faith lessons. I watched them pray and have symbols of their Christian faith around the house. And if I was with them on the weekend, I would go to church with them. And I also remember that there were some elderly relatives that lived around the corner from my grandparents. And my grandfather would pick them up and take them to church with us and then drop them home on the way back. And, you know, in my little mind as a child, I think I already got a glimpse of kind of just faith in action, just doing what was needed without any kind of fuss or bother. My grandfather died when I was 9, and this hit me very hard at the time, as I had perceived him to be a role model. In many ways, Dad worked long hours. In many ways, he was more emotionally present to me as a male role model in my life. And my grandmother outlived him by many years, and so I had a relationship with her well into adulthood. She lived with us in our home for much of my adolescence. My dad's parents, who were also great, lived overseas, and so I spent a couple of summers with them during my childhood, but they didn't have that same regular presence in my life. And now I watch my dad grandparenting, Mary, and he's really great in that role. He's kind of the stereotype, you know, of kind of being, he was quite the stern dad, and as I said, a bit absent because of his long work hours. Whereas now, as a grandfather, he's fun and available, and he splashes money and treats around with reckless abandon. For various reasons, he's the only grandparent in Mary's life at the moment, and the three of us feel very loved, supported, and blessed to have him around. Perhaps you can relate to what Mark Twain said, which was, "When I was 14, I couldn't believe how ignorant my father was. When I turned 21, I couldn't believe how much he'd learnt in 7 years." Of course, we know that's not everyone's experience, and we'll reflect a bit upon that in a moment. But let's first turn to today's passage and think a little bit about what Ephesians 6 has to teach us about this issue. Objectively, one of the incredible things about this passage is that it restates and therefore re-establishes the importance of the fifth commandment. And it is the only commandment with a promise. So when this commandment is stated in Exodus 20, verse 12, it says, "Honour your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you." And then here in Ephesians 6 that we've just heard read, it says, "Honour your father and mother," which is the first commandment with a promise, "so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth." Now, I find that fascinating that, you know, those things are kind of put together, connected to this commandment. John Sanford, someone who's well known in kind of Christian healing ministry circles, wrote in one of his books, "Almost every failure in life can be traced back to the breaking of the fifth commandment, honour your father and your mother." And one of the reasons for this is that our parents tend to be our first representation of God. If we have a very positive relationship with our parents as children, we are likely to receive God or see God in a very kind of positive light. But if we have a poor or strained relationship with our parents, we find it much harder to kind of understand or receive God as a heavenly parent who's loving and kind and compassionate and merciful. But the second reason that we're commanded to honour our parents is out of obedience to God. We don't honour them based on their performance or their behaviour. We honour them because that is what yielding our lives to Jesus looks like. He says, you know, if you love me, you'll obey my commandments. However, of course, that doesn't mean tolerating or celebrating sin or participating in behaviour that is ungodly. And there'll be people, perhaps in this room, certainly in our wider church, for whom there are good reasons why they are not, they might be estranged from parents or from children. But when we think about honour, The Hebrew root of the word for honour, kabad, means weight. Literally, honour is to give weight or importance to someone. To dishonour is to treat them lightly. The Bible calls us to honour everyone, and here specifically to honour mother and father. And so honour, giving weight to a person, that looks different at different stages of life. Like as a small child, honouring your parents looks like doing what they tell you to do. But, you know, as you get older, it might look more like respect or listening to guidance. Or, you know, as they get older and you get older, being concerned about their welfare and appreciating their care. And so as we consider afresh what it looks like to grandparent, one of the key roles is to attempt, insofar as it is possible, to nurture positive relationships with our adult children and their spouses. And sometimes, as I'm sure you know better than I do, sometimes that can be quite challenging. Ideally, we want to be allies with our grandchildren's parents in encouraging, blessing, and celebrating them. Now, I'm not naive. I know that this is difficult and, in some cases, impossible. But one thing that I think today's passage and this series invites us to do where possible is to seek to have positive relationships with our children that allow us to positively influence both them and our grandchildren without trying to do that in some sort of, you know, manipulative kind of way. So how do we do it? Well, today's passage, I think, suggests three things that we can do. And these three things are, it's good to reflect on our parenting, the parenting, you know, particularly the story, looking back. We're told specifically, fathers, do not exasperate your children, and I think that goes just as much for mothers as well. And thirdly, we're invited to be like intentionally prayerful for our children and their families. So reflecting on our parenting, not exasperating children, and being intentionally prayerful for our children and their families. So let's start with reflecting on our own parenting. The way our children parent our grandchildren will be influenced by the way we parented them. In some areas, they might imitate us, and perhaps in others, they might be having a reaction to our parenting and parenting their children quite differently. And while we have no doubt tried to do our best when our children were young and living at home, the reality is that there will be times when we've missed the mark. I can say that, you know, in my own parenting, where we perhaps did not represent our faith in a good and loving father or the values that flow from there particularly well. The first thing today's passage invites us to do is to reflect on these things and to be honest with ourselves about anything that was not as maybe it could have been. And now, as I invite you to do that, I want to encourage you not to be harsh or condemning with yourself about it. This is not a kind of a, you know, what could I have done better exercise. It's just an opportunity to have honest reflection. No one is perfect. All of us make mistakes. However, as things come to mind, no matter how seemingly insignificant, we can still bring those things to repentance. We can see where we need the Lord's forgiveness. And we can ask the Holy Spirit to show us how this particular situation impacted our child or any hurt that they might continue to experience as a result of this thing and pray for their healing and restoration. The next step, I think, is to consider if the Lord does bring something to mind or if you're just aware of something that, you know, needs prayer, is whether it's something that you need to raise with your son or daughter. You know, have we unintentionally given our children reason to dishonour us because of how a situation may have been handled when we were younger parents? Perhaps because of the pressure of that season, something important to our children was overlooked or an unnecessarily harsh word was spoken. At the time, it seemed relatively insignificant, but unbeknown to you, that can be something that's continuing to impact them today. And I encourage you not to underestimate this. The fifth commandment is a commandment with a promise that life will go well for you if you observe it. And we want to play our part in helping our kids to observe it. And so as we consider our adult children, we don't want to place any obstacle to them receiving the promise that comes with it. And again, look, I'm not a grandparent, So, you know, how I interact with this feels differently to me. But let me give you two examples. One thing with my own daughter is I try to keep short accounts. So, you know, very occasionally, I'll be under pressure, I'll be busy trying to get a sermon written or something done or whatever, and she'll come with something that seems seemingly kind of innocuous to me, and I might be like, I can't talk now, or, I might overreact to a situation. If I realise that I've done that, I try to go, you know, within minutes to her and say, I'm sorry, you know, that was upsetting that you interrupted me, but it didn't merit that response, you know. And I think, you know, keeping those short accounts is really important, whether you're talking about something that, you know, as the Holy Spirit brings it to mind, or whether it's something that happens now. It's just a way of saying, not letting that thing fester. The other thing that happened to me some time ago was that I had an experience where when I left home to get married, I was really struggling with some of the things that, you know, my parents were great, but, you know, no one's perfect. And I had things that I was really struggling with. And for a while, I was quite angry with them and hurt. I don't know whether they knew that or not. But anyway, I had this experience where I was on a prayer retreat and I had this real conviction that I had to, like, name it and I had to, like, release them. I had to, like, just forgive them for the things that I felt that they had missed. And just in my processing, I don't know if this was right or wrong, I didn't feel the need to tell them that. I didn't feel the need to talk to them, about the fact that I'd done that. But immediately, the next time I had a conversation with them, it was like something had shifted. Like that sense of that conversation I had with them, the interaction I had with them, the usual amount of like tension in the conversation, it was gone, you know? And it was like just the act of forgiving had shifted something in the kind of the spiritual atmosphere. And so that's my encouragement. It's a bit of a different thing to this, but it's my encouragement just to not leave things if you get a sense in prayer that it's something that should be named. So again, as you consider this point, the aim is not to be harsh on yourself. The aim is rather to throw yourself on the mercy on God, acknowledging that you are not perfect, but He is. And that when we lean into His power and His mercy, He can do more to bring peace and reconciliation in our children's lives than we ever could on our own. And you can be sure that this will have a positive flow-on effect to your grandchildren as well. So that's the first thing. We want to reflect on our own parenting and see what the Holy Spirit says to us about any of that. And number two, it says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children." Which, of course, I think is relevant to mothers too. The tendency with grandparents, especially if they feel underappreciated, is to fall into one of two extremes. It's either to be too involved, too overbearing, or not involved enough. And one can be uninvolved for a range of reasons. It could be just the life stage of the grandparent. Younger grandparents likely still work or have a busy schedule or maybe still have other adult children living at home. It could be that previous attempts to be involved have not been well received. It could be just geographical distance. I'm just not in the same city as me, so I don't get to have the same amount of interaction. Or it could be a range of other factors. I think unless there's a specific reason or request to not be involved in your grandchildren's life, we should assume that no involvement is not ideal. Some level of involvement is good. So how involved should grandparents be? Well, verse 4 says, "Do not exasperate your children." So whatever you do, don't be overbearing. Try to respect and work within the parenting style of your grandchildren's parents, even though that can be frustrating, even though you might know better than them what they're talking about. If there are house rules that you never had in your home, when your kids were small, try and respect them. Don't signal to your grandchildren that they are silly or excessive, right? Trivial example, you know, parents say, you know, no more treats tonight, and you say, you know, it's just our little secret, you know, like, or, you know, bedtimes or whatever those things are. If, you know, if it's a house, if the parents have set the rule, we want to be seen to be, you know, on the same page as parents. Without realizing it, we might have a tendency to be overly critical about the way our kids do things, whether how well they know their way around a kitchen, or how clean or ordered they keep the house, or how, you know, organised their schedule is, how they respond to particular situations. Always try to find an encouraging word to say. You know, if there's a constructive criticism that needs to be made, you know, try to have it with them off to the side, not, you know, over the dinner table. Offer it as a compliment sandwich, if you can. These things may seem basic, but they're often the difference between an awkward moment quickly blowing over and a deep hurt that has lasting impact, and also a deep hurt that then is modelled to grandchildren who sometimes are watching. I mean, very trivial. I remember as a child, when my grandmother was living with us, we had some guests, and she was going to make some complicated meal. And my mum said to her, how can I help? What can I do? And she said, when it's all done, you could wash all the dishes. You know, like as in you're not up to the task of making the meal. And I remember it as a kid. So we want to do that. Similarly, I remember there was a meal that my mum used to make, and my friends all liked it. So I was away on a trip with my friends, and I called mum and I said, do you think you could tell me how you make that meal so that I can make it for my friends? And she said, oh, I think it's a bit much for you. And so, of course, me being me, I said, tell me anyway, and it made me even more ambitious to learn how to make it. Ultimately, we want to foster a positive relationship where the parents of your grandchildren trust you to input into your children, and not overstepping the mark, but rather partnering with the parents in the work of guiding and raising these precious children. And thirdly and finally, I think be intentionally prayerful. And I suspect that Amanda's already probably drilled this point home last week, but I think it's here in today's passage as well. For some people here, and no doubt many parents that you will know, there are sons and daughters that have moved away from faith. And I think it's important to be aware of a few things. Firstly, more often than not, that's not because of you. Kids can grow up in the most amazingly faithful and Jesus-centered homes and move away from faith as they get older. You'll know this because some of you will have kids who, you know, one's still in the faith and one isn't. And so you go, I raise them exactly the same way. What's the difference, you know? And I know growing up that so many of the people that I grew up with are not in the faith anymore either. And I think, well, why am I any different? Like, why did I catch it and they didn't? And I don't know. But first, it's good to acknowledge that it's not you. Secondly, I think it's good to acknowledge, and again, I think I'm preaching to the choir here, but the church is a tough place to be for your kids if their lives have moved in a new direction. And what do I mean by that? Whether it's the workplace they're in, whether it's their geographical location, whether it's their sexual orientation, or the relationships that their dominant friendship groups, or whatever it might be, they might have a desire to belong, but feel like they can't. And sadly, we know that the church hasn't always dealt with this so well. In fact, just this morning, as I was getting ready to kind of close the doors, you know, after 10 a.m., this man walked in. He was clearly a bit troubled, a bit, you know, he had some, you know, and I ended up sitting down with him, and Conrad came over with me as well, and we had a long chat, and, you know, he just wanted to get some things out and tell us about his situation. But because he looks a bit rough around the edges, he said, people around here, like, they'll look the other way as I walk down the street, or, you know, go walk into buy a coffee and people will put their menus up over their face to avoid me, you know. And for completely different reasons, our kids can feel that way too. Even though they might have grown up here, might have, you know, fond memories of church, they can feel like that too. Like, if I walk in, I'm just an enigma to the people in the community. And then there are others who don't wish to, but I think irrespective of their circumstances, parents acknowledging that it's hard is a helpful start. And thirdly, even if they have given up on the church or on God, it's important to remember that God has not given up on them. And it's therefore important that we continue to intentionally pray for them and to intercede for them, as well as to model the best of Christianity to them. In all our words and actions and behaviours, we can model the love and faithfulness of Jesus, who did not allow convention or social etiquette to stop him crossing the aisle to speak to someone who did not fit the religious elite's view of the faith. And we can do that too. We can model that as well. And of course, we've been talking a lot about evangelism and things that stand in the way of people as we witness. And we should be mindful of these things as we talk to kids who perhaps have moved away from the faith. I want to finish with this two Bible passages that I wanted to just touch on as I kind of wrap up this point. And in a way, they both kind of relate to husbands and wives. But actually, I think their application is broader than that. So in 1 Peter 3, verses 1 to 2, it says, "Wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behaviour of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives." And I think this is true as parents of young people as well who maybe are not in the faith. It's like sometimes we can say 1,000 words, but how they see our lives will communicate a greater gospel than anything else. And that might be what's appropriate in this moment, that they just see in you Jesus. And so I think that's really, really important. And the second is like it. It's from 1 Corinthians 7, verse 13 and 14, but this one talks about children as well, so it's particularly relevant. It says, "If a woman has a husband who is not a believer and he is willing to live with her," as in stay with her, "she must not divorce him, for the unbelieving husband has been sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife has been sanctified through her believing husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean, but as it is, they are holy." So here it's talking about how one person's faith in the household actually sanctifies, makes holy other people in the house. It doesn't mean they're all saved, but it means that, in a sense, holy just means set apart, like God's got them, God knows them, God is engaged in their life through the believing person in their household. And if that's the case, I think that's really important. It's a real encouragement to us that even kids who've moved very far away from the faith are actually still made holy through your faith. And so I think that's really encouraging. And so as I was thinking about this last point in prayer, I was thinking about our other church, St. Augustine. The patron saint is Augustine. If you know anything about Augustine's story, he was pretty much a rat bag for most of his life until God kind of grabbed him and got to, you know, he came to a radical saving faith in Jesus. But his mother, Monica, is also known as a saint in the church, and her claim to faith, to fame, is that she prayed for years and years and years for her unbelieving son and her unbelieving husband to come to faith. And they did. And Augustine, of course, became one of the early doctors, church fathers of the church. He wrote lots of the theology we have today. And you know, there was a mother who prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed without ceasing. And so I worked in a school called St. Monica's, and the motto of the school was pray and persevere, like St. Monica, who prayed and persevered for her son, Augustine. And so I think as we come to a close today, I think it's really important that we do think about, sometimes I think in these situations, we do feel like, you know, what can we do? You know, if we're not... if our influence is not welcome, or if people don't want to hear it, or whatever. But I think this invitation today to reflect on our own parenting, to not exasperate our children, and to be intentionally prayerful for our children, for their families, for our grandchildren, is a great way to go. And that's the way, in the light of Ephesians 6, that we keep honouring everyone. And God willing, our children will honour us as we do that. So let me pray.